very much, Milka.
Thank you.
For that introduction. And we can get started. So Milka asked me if I can speak about something relating to the upcoming holiday. We're about to celebrate Shavuos in just 2 weeks. So we're already at that critical juncture where it seems like it's just around the corner. And one of the major themes, obviously, of Chag Shavuos is that it's Zman Matan Toraseinu. This is the time in which we have a celebration for the giving of the Torah. It's interesting that when we refer to the giving of the Torah, like at the beginning of Pirkei Avos, we speak about Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai, that Moshe received the Torah from Har Sinai, that we speak about it in terms of Kabbalah's Torah, of the receiving of the Torah, but in our prayer, we say Zman Matan Torah Seinu, is the time of the giving of the Torah. And there really is a dialectical theme, that it's both a giving on the part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's receiving on our part, and that's what's reenacted every single Shavuos. So therefore, it behooves us to go back to the original giving and receiving of the Torah so we can understand the spirit in which we're supposed to accept upon ourselves that the Torah every single year, Shavuos time, and that should be part of our existence the rest of the year as well, an understanding of what it means to accept upon ourselves the Torah. So there's a contradiction, because on the one hand, we're told in Parshas Mishpatim that Bnei Yisrael said, Kol Shiv Dibir Hashem Naseh V'Nishma, that everything that Hashem wants to give us, and everything that Hashem is commanding, Naseh V'Nishma, we're going to do it unconditionally, and we fully accept it upon ourselves without any reservation whatsoever. It seems like it was a completely voluntary acceptance of the Torah by Bnei Yisrael. On the other hand, in Parshas Yisrael, we're told that everybody stood on the foot of the mountain. And what does it mean that they stood on the foot of the mountain, on the mountain of Har Sinai? So Chazal derived from here that Mikan Shekafu Aleihem Hahar Kigigis, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu suspended the mountain over their heads as if it were a giant barrel. You can use the expression, we know the expression that he held them over a barrel, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu held them under a barrel, that everybody was standing under this giant barrel, this giant tub, this giant vat. So Kigis, think of like a giant bathtub that's about to be dropped, God forbid, on your head. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu said, if you accept upon yourselves the Torah, then all will be good for you. And if not, there will be your graves. So that doesn't sound exactly like a willing and voluntary acceptance of the Torah. That sounds like a forced acceptance of the Torah, that the Torah was going to be dropped, that the mountain was going to be dropped on their heads, if not for the fact that Bnei Yisrael would accept the Torah. So this is an obvious contradiction, and seems to be also a contradiction between the nature of the Kabbalah, the receiving of the Torah, and the Matana, the giving of the Torah by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. On the one hand, the Torah seems to have been received in a fashion of Naseh V'Nishma, we willingly and happily accept upon ourselves the Torah. That's what we have always been taught from a young age, right? That all the other nations of the world said, Nein, Alti Salem, we're not interested in accepting the Torah. It has all of these various laws that we don't like, that you can't kill, that you can't steal, that you can't commit incest. So it was rejected by the other nations of the world for one reason or another. Kadosh Baruch Hu comes to Bnei Yisrael and we say, woohoo, the Torah, we don't even know what's written in it necessarily, but whatever it is, we accept it, we take it, Naseh V'Nishma, no questions asked. The same idea whenever a convert to Judaism comes to join the religion nowadays, we say that even if they don't know all of the 613 mitzvot in meticulous detail, all they have to do is have the same sentiment of Naseh V'Nishma. Whatever it is, I've learned a little bit, but I don't know all the details, but I will accept upon myself all of the Torah, even though I am not yet familiar with all of the details. So that's kind of like the standard storyline. But then when it comes to what we might call Matan Torah, Sma Matan Torah, saying the giving of the Torah, told me, that that HaKadosh Baruch Hu suspended the mountain over our heads like a big tub that we had to somehow be forced into it. So how do we reconcile this apparent contradiction between being forced to do it and doing it willingly? It's an interesting comment that you might wonder in your machzor when you open it up on Yontif and you get up to like the Hanchileno Hashem Elokeinu. And for Shabbos we say Be'ava V'Ratzon, that Shabbos we accept with great willingness, Ratzon, Ava, and great love. And if it's Yontif, we say B'Simcha V'Sasa, we say with happiness and joy, but the would be Ava is not inserted. Only if it's Shabbos, Yontif that falls out on Shabbos, do we say B'Ava with love. So the Binyan Shlomo Mivilna, explains that the reason we don't say Bi'ava when it comes to Yontif is because the laws of Yontif were given in Har Sinai, like the rest of the Torah. That was the first time that these laws were given, and that was forced upon B'nai Yisrael, based on the suspension of the Har, the suspension of the mountain. So that wasn't completely Bi'ava. But Shabbos was one of the laws that was given at an earlier point in time in Mara. There were several laws that were given in the little place called the Mara, in the desert, and one of those laws was Shabbos, so therefore that wasn't part of this qualification, that it was only accepted based on the mountain be hovering over their head, and therefore that was accepted fully Bi'ava. That was accepted willingly and voluntarily, so therefore when it comes to Shabbos, so Shabbos is Bi'ava. When it comes to Yontif, so that's the Kafa Olam Har Kigigah, so that doesn't quite have Bi'ava. So we see that we sometimes actually incorporate this theme even into our Nusach HaTfilah, interestingly enough. But Tosfos asked the question, doesn't it seem, however, to be a contradiction, even with respect to the Kabbalah, the acceptance of all of the mitzvos that weren't necessarily given early on, most of the totality of the Torah, isn't that really subject to Naaseh B'Nishma? And a lot of different answers are given to this question, and I wanted to share some of the answers in terms of how it might inspire our thinking as we prepare for the Shavuos holiday. So there are three different, I would say, categories of answers that are given by the commentators, but given by the different Mefarshim. One category says, well, there were different aspects of the Torah that were accepted willingly and voluntarily, and there were other aspects that had to be coerced, that had to be forced upon B'nai Yisrael. A second category of answers is that, well, really, maybe it was a little bit of both, that there was a little bit of a willing acceptance and there was a little bit of a coerced acceptance. It just really depends on your perspective of how you look at it. And the third category of answers goes into a different type of explanation that says that maybe part of the voluntary acceptance of the Torah consisted of the hovering of the mountain over their head, that was not a contradiction to the voluntary acceptance of the Torah. And I want to give different explanations in each category of these answers. So let's first start with the category that of answers that speak about different aspects of the giving of the Torah, some of which could have been subject to coercion, and others that could have been subject to voluntary acceptance. So Tosfos, who asked the question, gets to give the first answer, because it's only fair you ask the question, so your answer ought to be spelled out first. So Tosfos gives the answer. This is in Masechet Shabbos, on Daf Pei Chesam and Aleph, that really there was a voluntary acceptance of the Torah, but there was a concern that that acceptance occurred before all of the pomp and ceremony of the fire and the lightning and the awesome and terrifying experience of God's presence actually appearing in Har Sinai. And there was a fear that maybe when they would see behold the fearsome and awesome presence of God at Har Sinai, they would recoil and they would retract. And they would say, whoa, 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 this is more than what we bargained for. We didn't realize that it's going to be so terrifying. So that's a nice answer. And therefore, says Tosfos, that's why it was necessary just to ensure that there would be no backtracking at that point in time, that God had to suspend the mountain over their heads and threaten to drop it upon them, if not for the fact that they would accept the Torah. So what is Tosfos, what is Tosfos really saying? So Rav Yehuda Amital, Zichrono Levacha, who is a Rosh Yeshiva and Yeshiva at Gush Etzion in Eretz Yisrael, explained what Tosfos really means is as follows. And that at the time of Har Sinai, when things were pretty easy, and things were really taken care of by Hashem, there were miracles every day of their lives. They didn't really have to worry about where the food was going to come from. They had man coming down from heaven. Their clothes never really had to be changed. They had to be laundered. I mean, if you don't have to worry about laundry, so, you know, life is pretty good. So at that point in time, they said, okay, so for the lifestyle that we're living, Torah seems to work pretty well at this place, at this point in time. And therefore, there was a complete and unconditional acceptance on the part of the Jewish people. But that was not necessarily something that could be translated into times that would be fierce, into times that would be terrifying, into times that would be troublesome. That's what was represented by the great fire that Tosfos refers to at the time of the actual giving of the Torah. So Rav Amital said that was the idea of suspending the mountain over their heads to make it clear that even when times are going to be tough, even when there might be situations in life where keeping the Torah might be very difficult, even when one is living in a location where it might be extremely challenging to keep the Torah, that the acceptance should not be dependent upon how easy it is, how comfortable it is at any point in time, but it's something which is permanent and it's something which is perennial. Yes, you had a question?
Yeah, when was they accepted it before?
Accepted it twice? Yeah, the Rashi in Parshas Mishpatim, where the Pasuk appears of Kol Asher Dibar Hashem Naaseh V'Nishma, that everything that Hashem says we're going to accept unconditionally. Rashi says, "E muktam amulcha b'Torah." Even though this is stated in Parshas Mishpatim, it really happened before the Torah was given. So that's Tosfos' assumption as well. Tosfos assumes that Nasa v'Nishma was stated before this idea of Kapa Alei Mahar Kegigis. That's the assumption. So Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, Zechut Tzadik Livracha, also expounds upon this theme of the idea of the acceptance of the Torah when the mountain was suspended over their head as being something which was intended to translate into future generations and future circumstances, because he asks another question that others ask as well. It's a famous question. I quoted from you the Gemara, which states that when the mountain was suspended over the heads of Bnei Yisrael, Kadosh Baruch Hu said that if you're going to accept the Torah mutav, everything will be good, bimlav, and if not, shom, there, tehek v'rostem. So the question that is asked by many Meforshim is, what do you mean shom, there, tehek v'rostem? It should be kan, here, tehek v'rostem. That right here and now, God is going to drop the mountain on your heads, and that'll be the end of you. So why does he say there, shom, tehek v'rostem? So Rav Soloveitchik gives the answer that it's not a statement about what's going to happen right then and there. Right then and there, they were in Nasa V'Nishma mode. Of course, they were all awestruck by God's clear and obvious presence in their lives, that the miraculous existence that they had was sufficient to convince them that, of course, they should accept the Torah, and their acceptance was absolute and without any qualification whatsoever. However, the idea, Kapalei Mahar Kegigis, was that they should bear in mind that this is not only something for that time, but in all generations, if they want to survive, if they want to subsist, if they want to thrive, they're going to need to always accept upon themselves the Torah. And at any point in time, in any place where they might be, where we, Bnei Yisrael, might be, and God forbid, not accept the Torah, shom tehek v'rostem. That will be the end. That will be the burial place. Any time in history where Jews have not kept the Torah, so that's been the end of the Jewish community in those places. That's been the destruction of the Jewish community. That in order for us to have a survival in this world, we have to maintain our allegiance to the Torah, and otherwise, shom tehek v'rostem. In that place, that could be a place of burial rather than a place of survival. And therefore, this was the message that was underscored at the time that the Torah was given.
And
yes?
Does that mean that they're going to be punished and they won't exist, or just that they're going to assimilate and marry out and kill themselves if they don't keep the Torah?
It would really be a combination, meaning that that itself is the harshest punishment. It's like the idea of Astaki Aretz Eschem, that when we're even in Eretz Yisrael and not observing the Torah, not observing the Shemitah, so the Torah says, well, then the land just spits you out. It's a punishment, but it's also, from a spiritual perspective, a natural consequence of not keeping the laws of the Torah. That's also part of this idea of Sham Tehei Kvuraslem. A second answer that's given along these lines is given by the Maharsha. The Maharsha says that when they said Nasa V'Nishma, so Nasa V'Nishma, it's easy to give lip service to accepting the Torah. Lip service, just saying, yeah, of course, I'm going to do it. You know, somebody asks you to do a favor, yeah, of course, I'm going to do it. But giving lip service and actually doing something are two very different things. To actually exert yourself and remember your commitment and perform on your commitment. So the idea of the mountain hovering over their heads was a Kaddish Baruch Hu saying that it's not enough to just say, I believe. That Judaism is a religion not merely of giving lip service, of making statements, but it's a religion of action. It's a religion of doing. We say that what's so important about learning Torah is that Gadol Talmud Torah b'she'a Talmud meivi lidei maaseh, that the learning of Torah is not supposed to be only for learning, but it's supposed to be for the sake of doing, for the sake of actually performing mitzvot. So it's not sufficient to say, yes, I believe in it. Of course, I'm not strong enough to actually perform it. Well, I'm not like a big rabbi or a big rebbetzin that I can actually be expected to be held to the standards of practicing what I preach. No, everybody has to not only preach, everybody has to not only daven, everybody has to not only give the lip service that they are accepting the Torah, but you have to actually perform the Torah in your lives. And that's the idea of the mountain, being hovered over their heads to say, Nasa V'Nishma is very nice, but the mere lip service is not sufficient. You have to actually perform on your word. Finally, the explanation that's given by the Medrash Tanhuma is that there are two different parts of the Torah, as we all know very well. Shavuos is a celebration of a Torah Shebichtav, really, of the written Torah. That the idea originally was when the Luchos were given at the when they were the first time around, everything really was going to be included, the entire Torah, what we call Torah Shebichtav, the written Torah, and Torah Sheba'al Peh, it all was going to be Torah Shebichtav. Everything was going to be included in the original set of Luchos. It was only after the Chet HaEgel that we're told that there was a bifurcation, that there was a decision that just a certain amount would be written in Torah Shebichtav form, and the rest would be in Torah Sheba'al Peh form. Since after the Chet HaEgel, we were not meritorious of being the masters over our destiny. We would have to be subjugated by various nations, and there was a fear that the nations would kind of take over the Torah if they had access to it. Therefore, a certain amount of the Torah had to be kept as Torah Sheba'al Peh. So that's why when the second set of Luchos were given in Yom Kippur, the Yom Kippur is often referred to as the holiday that celebrates Torah Sheba'al Peh. But Shavuos was a holiday celebrating Torah Shebichtav. There were two different elements of the Torah. There's Torah Shebichtav, the written Torah. There's Torah Sheba'al Peh, which is the oral Torah, the oral transmission of Torah. There's a question that's asked, why is it that the Gemara in Pesachim says that Shavuos, everybody agrees, there's a disagreement about Yomim Tovim in general, between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Elazar, about whether in the celebration of Yomim Tovim, whether they're supposed to be Chetziol Hashem and Chetziol Lachem. The way you celebrate it is half of it should be service to Hashem and half of it service to yourself, eating and drinking and just having a good time materially, or whether it has to be either Kulo Lashem, fully devoted to Hashem, or Kulo Lachem, there's no hybrid idea. So that's the machlokis. And we paskin like Rabbi Yehoshua in the Gemara in Pesachim and Daf Samaches, that in general, holidays have to have both aspects. They have to have kulo l'ashem, they have to have chetzio l'ashem. Half of it has to be you go to shul and you daven and you are involved in Torah study and Torah and the service of prayer towards Hashem half the day, and chetzio l'ashem, and half of it you're having a good time. You're eating and drinking and so forth. Of course, spiritually you have a good time too, but I mean you have a materially, from a Gashmias perspective, you're eating and drinking. However, when it comes to Shavuos, when it comes to the holiday that celebrates the giving of the Torah, it's Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. So then the Gemara says that everybody agrees to be in a nami lachem. Hakom modim ba'atzeres to be in a nami lachem. Everybody agrees when it comes to Shavuos that you have to have an aspect of eating and drinking and having some sort of a Gashmiya celebration as well. Why? My time. Yom Shenitna Bo Torah Hu. Because this is the day that the Torah was given over. So there's a question. If that's the way in which we celebrate the day in which the Torah was given over, so why is it that on Yom Kippur, we don't say similarly that there should be eating and drinking on Yom Kippur? That was also a day of Kabbalah Satorah. That's the day that the second set of Luchos were given over. Shavuos was the day in which the Seres Hadivros were declared to the Jewish people, and we prepared to receive the first set of Luchos, which eventually were broken. So why is it that on Yom Kippur we don't say that everybody agrees that you should be eating and drinking? Well, the Torah says, Yenisem Esnaf Shoseichem, but why does the Torah say you have to afflict yourselves? So the Medrash gives a very interesting distinction between Torah Shebichtav and Torah Sheba'al Peh. The Medrash Tanchuma says that, you know, with respect to what did the Jewish people say, Naaseh V'Nishma, that we're going to accept the Torah with a full sense of willingness and unbridled happiness. That's with respect to Torah Shebichtav. Torah Shebichtav is easy. You sit, you learn Tanakh. It's not an undertaking which is incredibly stressful, which requires tremendous analytical precision. It's something which is much more accessible than all of the syllogistic analysis that's contained in the Talmud. And therefore, that's something which B'nai Yisrael said, no problem, naseh v'nishma. When it came, however, to Torah Shebaal Peh, they'll have to be studying for hours and hours every single day, and we'll have to be breaking our teeth to figure out what the Gemara means and to figure out all of the commentaries and to make sense of the entire corpus of Torah Sheba'al Peh, which is a very murky subject until you really struggle for many, many years and begin to find some illumination and begin to understand a little bit of its mysteries and of its riddles and its incredibly complex structure. So that was Kaf Olam Har Kegigis, the acceptance of Torah Sheba'al Peh, of the oral law. So that was something that had to be forced onto B'nai Yisrael. It was not accepted willingly. And of course the Gemara says that in the end, even what was not accepted with the full willingness and with full voluntariness and with full happiness at the time of Matan Torah, Hada Kiblu Bimei Achashe Bimei Mordechai VeEsther, it was eventually, even that was accepted willingly and happily during the days of Mordechai and Esther. When it says Kimu VeKiblu Ayehudim, it means Kimu Masha Kiblu Kvar, that they accepted upon themselves that aspect as well later on. But at the time in which the Torah was given over, the Torah Sheba'al Peh was more reluctantly accepted, and therefore that had to be forced upon the people. So that would explain, if we say that Shavuos is the celebration of Torah Shebichtav, and that was accepted willingly and happily, so then we understand that that's why it's accompanied with feasts and food and so forth. While if Yom Kippur was the holiday of Torah Sheba'al Peh, and that was not accepted quite as happily, and that had to be forced upon the people, so therefore that doesn't have the same aspect of celebrating with food and drink, because that wasn't something that was celebrated at the time in which it was actually given. This is essentially understanding that the Medrash gives us that this is the duality of the acceptance of the Torah between Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh. So if we understand it that way, then that also gives us an appreciation of why we have the minhag to stay up all night during Shavuos, because the Gemara tells us that the best time to master Torah Shebaal Peh is at night. The Torah Shebichtav is something which is mastered during the daytime, but Torah Shebaal Peh is the ideal time in which the nighttime is the ideal time that Torah Shebaal Peh is mastered. So therefore, that explains the whole idea of Tikkun Leil Shavuos, that the reason why we stay up all night on Shavuos night is because that's the time in which we dedicate to Torah Shebaal Peh, that we're doing tshuva. For the fact that on the original Shavuos, the original time that the Torah was given over, we were reluctant to accept upon ourselves Torah Shebaal Peh, but now we're showing that we have overcome that reluctance and we happily embrace not only Torah Shebichtav, but even Torah Shebaal Peh, and that's why we stay up all night so that we can take advantage of the opportunity to learn Torah Shebaal Peh during the optimal time in which Torah Shebaal Peh is supposed to be learned. So those are, just to review, three different answers of the different aspects of what was accepted and what wasn't accepted. According to Tosfos, what was accepted willingly was at that point in time when they said Nasev and Ishma. It was an acceptance for when times would be good and Torah and keeping Torah would be easy. And the Kafalam Aharki Gigas was for times in which it would not necessarily come as easy, but nonetheless we have to force ourselves and keep Torah even during those times. According to the Maharsha, the idea of Nasa Vinishma is that it's lip service, which is very good, but Kafalam Aharki Gigas teaches us that we have to do more than lip service, but keeping Torah is all about doing the deeds and following through on the actions. And according to the Medrash Tanhuma, Nasa Vinishma was about Torah Shebichtav, and Kafa Lam Harkigigas is with respect to Torah Shebaal Peh. So now let me go into the second category of answers, which says that it wasn't necessarily a breakdown between what was accepted and what wasn't accepted, but Kafa Lam Harkigigas could be descriptive of a different perspective of looking at the Nasa Vinishma experience. And the most famous answer is articulated by the Meshech Chochma. The Meshech Chochma, also known as the Or Sameach, gives the answer that it was, in fact, a willing acceptance at the time the Torah was given. But what did we say before? We said this was a time of tremendous miracles. It was a time of tremendous Giloy Shechina. So when there's such tremendous Giloy Shechina, and God's existence cannot be in doubt, and the giving of the Torah cannot be in doubt, it's like the Kuzari says, how do we know for sure that we can say for a fact that the Torah was given at Mahar Sinai? So he says, because we had 600,000 witnesses, that it's not like this is a story that one person saw that the Torah was given. All of our ancestors saw it, and they transmitted it from generation to generation to generation. So just imagine the amount of faith of the generation that actually experienced Matan Torah, that actually experienced the Esamakos, that actually experienced Yetzias Mitzrayim. There was no question about God's presence. There was no question about the divinity of the Torah. There was no question about the veracity of the Torah. So even though they accepted the Torah willingly, how voluntary is that? When you have no question whatsoever, when you have no doubt whatsoever, when it's crystal clear without any question whatsoever, then of course the Torah is true. You could say it's voluntary, but the reality is that it was so incredibly obvious for them, it was as if a mountain was dangled over their head and they were forced into doing it, because what kind of free choice is that when the choice is so blatantly and fundamentally obvious? So that's what it means, says the Meshech Chochma, the Kafa Leim Ahar Kegigas. Qualitatively, it was Kafa Leim Ahar Kegigas. And that's why when the Gemara says that Hadar Kiblua b'mei Mordechai ve'Esther, that in the days of Achashverosh, that the Torah was really only then fully accepted voluntarily. What it means is it was accepted voluntarily beforehand, but was accepted voluntarily during a time of Gilui Shechina. The Chiddush of the days of Mordechai ve'Esther is that it was accepted b'mei Achashverosh even during a time of Hester Panim. So we know that Esther min Torah minayim, that what's the whole theme of Megillas Esther is Vanochi Aster Aster Panai Bayomahu. That it's even when God's presence was not obvious, when the story, you read Megillas Esther, doesn't even have Hashem's name, you would have to read into the events of history to have an appreciation of God's hand in the entire story and realize that the Kodesh Baruch Hu is pulling all the strings and making all the events happen and bringing about the ultimate salvation of the people, that when at that point in time, even in a time when there was no Gilui Shechina, when there was no obvious presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it was something that had to be gleaned, something that had to be figured out from the darkness of Galus, when they voluntarily accepted the Torah at that time, so that no longer is defined as Kaf Olam Ahar Kigigis. That's a higher level of acceptance, even when it's not blatantly obvious, to have an acceptance of the Torah, to have an appreciation of how one is supposed to accept the Torah upon oneself. And in fact, Rav Shlomo Amar, the former Sephardic chief rabbi of Israel, the Rishon LeZion, he's now the Sephardic chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, he points out that if you look in the Targum Yonasan, on the Pasuk of Vayis Yatzvu B'Sachti Sahar, so the Targum Yonasan says that that the mountain was dangled in the air. Actually, the Targum Yonasan captures this idea of the Gemara of Kaf Olam Ahar Kigigis, B'Habazayik Hayikas Paklaria. And he says, and it was clear as like the clearest possible glass, like a Kaspaklaria Me'ira, that the Gemara describes being able to behold the Shechina as a Kaspaklaria Me'ira, as this crystal clear glass that everybody was able to see, all seven rikios, all of the levels of Shemayim, the levels of heaven in front of them, that it was so obvious, it was so clear. So that idea is captioned in the Targum Yonasan as well. That's the idea of Kaf Olam Ahar Kigigis, that it was so clear that it wasn't even a possibility to conceive of a different choice at that time other than accepting the Torah. Now, the Maharal gives another explanation. And the Maharal says that the idea of Kaf Olam Ahar Kigigis was that when they accepted, this is the Maharal in Tiferes Yisrael, Perek Lamed Beis, and the Maharal has this a few places in his writings. He says that the idea is that even though Bnei Yisrael accepted the Torah upon themselves willingly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to send the message. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to send the message that you shouldn't think that it's something which really is dependent upon your choice. And if you accept the Torah, wonderful. And if you don't accept the Torah, then the world will continue to function perfectly fine. The idea of dangling the mountain over their heads was HaKadosh Baruch Hu sending a message that if not for the acceptance of the Torah, Yaxor Shemayim Ve'aretz, Yaxor Olam Letohu Vavohu, that the entire world would be transformed to nothingness, that it would collapse upon itself. That we know that Vayera Yivoker Yom HaShishi, that why does it say with respect to the sixth day of creation, HaShishi, the sixth day? So the Gemara says that the word Hey is talking about the a specific Yom Shishi, a specific sixth day, the sixth day of Sivan, in which the Torah was given. That the Torah is saying that in order for creation, the 6 days of creation, in which the world was created to be able to stand for the future, it all dependent upon this moment in time. The sixth day of Sivan, when the Torah was given to the Jewish people, if we would accept the Torah, then the world would continue to stand. And if we would not accept the Torah, then the world would no longer stand. And that the existence of the world depends upon our keeping of the Torah. Lo brisi yomam malai the chukos shemayim ma'aretz lo samti. that the existence, the continued existence of the world is dependent upon our keeping of the Torah. That's why in the yeshiva of Elojim, they used to be very, very makbid, that they would learn 24 hours a day. There would always be somebody in the base medrash at all times. The Netziv of Naftali Tzvi Bolin, who was the Rosh Yeshiva, was very, very makbid about this, that no matter what was going on in the yeshiva, let's say it would be the Purim Sud, everybody's going out and getting drunk, there was one person who had to be designated to sit in the yeshiva because he was afraid that maybe if somebody wasn't learning in Volozhin at that moment, maybe they wouldn't be learning in any of the other yeshivas either, and then the entire world would collapse. He took it very seriously. He was afraid that the world would just blow up if not for the fact that a person was learning Torah at every single moment in time. That this is, it was such an essential message. This is the idea of Kof Olam Al Kegiges. Understand, you have to take this very, very seriously. If you're not going to learn Torah constantly, then the world will actually collapse. And therefore, the Kabbalah Satorah has to be something which has permanence. This was a message that was being conveyed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu by virtue of this idea of Kof Olam Ahar Kegiges. And finally, there's sort of this a philosophical explanation, which is given by Rav Soloveitchik in his famous essay called Lonely Man of Faith. Anybody familiar with that essay, Lonely Man of Faith? So Rav Soloveitchik writes, Hatam le hachnasas gore makfia lebris hagadola besinai. He says that the idea of this concept of the compulsion of accepting the Torah, of the dangling of the mountain over their heads, b'nigud l'chayra l'sipur hamikroi, which seems to be in contradistinction to the literal account that we find in the Torah of the expression of naseh v'nishma. What's the idea? So he says this idea is kind of like an existential idea, to use Rav Soloveitchik's usual terminology. That it talks about the way that a human being is supposed to view himself or herself. Hu she isha bris, that a person, a covenantal person, a person who has accepted the covenant of the Torah, the covenant of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, chash, has to be able to have the apprehension. She Elokim kofe alav machmia oso, he has to feel at all times subjugated to the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who has to surrender his will or her will to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, af b'shah shupoel keben chorin, even during a time in which you feel like you're functioning as a freewheeling individual, you should understand at all times that our freedom is dependent upon a submission and a subjugation towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that is dependent upon a constant awareness of the hovering presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our lives, and that even our freedom, so to speak, is even our free choice of naseh v'nishma is circumscribed by a surrender to the Almighty. And that means, of course, even when we don't fully understand something, there is that surrender. Like Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach writes that the Midbar, the Dor HaMidbar, the generation that was in the desert was a Dor Dea. It was a generation of great understanding, of great comprehension of the Torah. So they could say Naseh v'nishma and have in mind we're going to do and we're also going to understand. V'nishma could not only mean that we're going to learn everything, but we're going to make sure we understand everything. Not in every generation. And not every individual is as capable of that full level of understanding. But even if we're not fully capable of that level of a full comprehension or understanding regarding what the Torah requires of us, nonetheless, we still have to engage in this surrender. And we can relate this as well to this theme of the reluctance that the Medrash speaks about to accept Torah Sheba Al Peh. Because what does Torah Sheba'al Peh really represent? It represents emunas chachamim. Often when you hear people say, Torah Sheba'al Peh, I accept. Yeah, if it's right there in the psukim, then I'm comfortable with. But Torah Sheba'al Peh, you know, that's like what the rabbis say. The rabbis are human beings, and I don't always trust the rabbis. I don't always go along with the rabbis. So part of the idea is this notion of emunas chachamim, that our subjugation to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is also an incorporation of the idea of Emunas Chachamim, that we trust the process of Mesorah. We trust the process of the transmission of the Torah from generation to generation of Moshe Kibel Torah, Misinai Umasra, Yeshua, Yeshua, Lezakeimen, Lezakeimen, Lenevim, Lenevim, Anshe Knesset HaGedoyla, that we believe that the transmission from generation to generation amongst all of the Chachamim of every single door, this is also part of our subjugation towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that we have to understand that this is part of our voluntary acceptance of the Torah as well. So to review the three answers regarding a question of perspective, where it's not a contradiction between certain things that were accepted and certain things that weren't accepted, but the way in which it was accepted. So the Meshech Chokhmah says, of course, everything was accepted voluntarily. It's just that how voluntary could it be at the time of Matan Torah, when the truth of God and the truth of the Torah was manifestly obvious to everybody, and that's why it had to be reaccepted during the days of Ahasuerush. The second explanation of the Maharal, that of course everything was accepted voluntarily, but Hashem wanted to send the message that you need to understand that even though you accepted it voluntarily, if you would decide not to accept it, then the entire world will collapse, that the world depends upon your continued acceptance of the Torah. And Rav Soloveitchik's explanation, that it was accepted voluntarily, but part of your existence of living as voluntary, free agents, nonetheless has to consist of this understanding of subordination and subjugation towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu that has to guide us in terms of our perspective towards Torah and our perspective towards our lives. And this is also another very important dimension of Sham Tehei Kvuraschem, that Sham could also be understood as that if you don't have this understanding of subordination to the wisdom of the Chachamim in every single generation, Sham Tehei Kvuraschem, that if you're going to rely upon your own judgment forever, your own judgment is going to be fallible. And if you don't have the sense that there's a Mesorah and there's a tradition and there's a correct answer and there's a correct hadracha as to how we're supposed to comport and conduct ourselves in every single generation and in every single situation, so once we would descend into a state, God forbid, of moral relativism, Sham Tehei Kvuraschem. That spells an end, and that spells a dissipation towards the Jewish people and towards the Torah tradition. So therefore, we have to always maintain that sense of subjugation to the tradition of the Torah. Now, the third category of answers is in the domain of what I would call that a kafiyah, a coercion that is for the sake of enhancing the Kabbalah, for the sake of actually enhancing our Kabbalah mitzvahs. So let me give you a couple of explanations along these lines. What's the idea of Kafa Leam Ahar Kigigis? So one explanation of Kafa Leam Ahar Kigigis is the idea that if something is merely voluntary, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says that, let's say you had a non-Jew who wanted to learn Torah. So if a non-Jew wanted to learn Torah, then if it's something that relates to what they're obligated to observe, like Zion Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, for example, so they also get a reward. But the reward that they get is Ke'eno Mitzuvah Ve'oseh, like someone who's not commanded but does what they're not commanded to do anyway, there's a certain measure of reward. But the greatest reward goes to somebody who is mitzuvah ve'oseh. That's why we celebrate bar mitzvah. We recently made a bar mitzvah. One of my sons, thank God, and my son turned to me right before he became bar mitzvah, and he said, Abba, I'm very, very nervous because I'm afraid up until now I wasn't obligated to do anything. If I did it good, if I didn't do it, so I wouldn't get a punishment. But now I'm so nervous that I'll make a mistake and I'll do something wrong and I'll get punished for it. So it's a good, wonderful. It's exactly the attitude you're supposed to have. That's why we celebrate your bar mitzvah. Because your reward is so much greater when you become a mitzvah ve'osin, when you become commanded to do something. And Tosfos in Avodah Zarah asks the question, why is the reward greater? So Tosfos says, you want to know why the reward is greater? It's because a person who's obligated to do something is doeg u'mistayer tamid. He's always very, very nervous that he's afraid that maybe he's not going to do it, and then he'll be subject to consequences for his failure to perform that which he is obligated to do. While if somebody doesn't have the obligation, so they always know they have a fallback option. They don't do it, nothing bad happens. They have pas pisalo, their bread is in the basket, they have nothing to worry about. But a person who's obligated, who has something to worry about, so then that person's schar, that person's reward is going to be much greater. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have said to the Jewish people at that time, it's wonderful that you said Nasa Minishma, you're accepting it upon yourself voluntarily, but I'm going to make sure your reward is much greater. I'm going to make sure you're going to be able to attain the maximum fulfillment of keeping the Torah. And the only way to do that is by kavolei mahar kigigis, is by suspending the mountain over your head. So I make sure that gives you the yetzer hara, because now you're going to be all nervous that you have to keep the Torah, and therefore it's going to be more of a challenge to do something that you absolutely are mandated to do. And because it's going to be more of a challenge, it's going to be gadol hametzuvah oseh, and therefore your reward is going to be much greater as a result. And it could be, maybe metaphorically, this is why the Medrash, the Gemara, uses this terminology of kofa ha'leim ha'har kigigis, that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu suspended over their head was the mountain. Because the Gemara in Sukkah on Daf Nun Beis says that the Asid Lobo, in the future, everybody goes up to heaven when it comes time for Olam Haba, and the Rishayim look at the Yetzirah that they weren't able to conquer during their lifetime, and they see that it was kind of like the Skuta Sahara, is this like tiny little string that they weren't able to overcome, and they're going to feel so bad that they could have so easily defeated and vanquished the Yetzirah. And the Tzaddikim are going to look at the Yetzirah, and it's going to resemble to them a Har Gadol. It's going to resemble a giant mountain. And they're going to cry, maybe cries of tears, look at how we were able to vanquish this giant mountain. So what is this terminology and the symbolism of the mountain? It could be this is the mountain that we're talking about. This is the mountain that was dangled over their heads. And maybe that's the mountain that the Gemara in the Sukkah is referring to, that the Tzaddikim will say, oh, we're so appreciative. We're so appreciative that it was like a mountain that we needed to conquer, that it was such a formidable Yetzirah that we needed to overcome because we were obligated in the mitzvahs, and since we were obligated by virtue of the mountain being suspended over our heads, therefore we were able to receive a much greater reward as a result of that mountain, as a result of the fact that since we were obligated to do it, that we had the Yetzirah, and that therefore we were able to ascend to a much higher level by overcoming that mountain, by overcoming that Yetzirah. So that HaKadosh Baruch Hu qualitatively made our acceptance into a more meaningful and more edifying acceptance by virtue of creating the obligation, and not only the option of keeping the Torah, and therefore making it a more difficult challenge to do so, increasing the Yetzirah, and therefore increasing our reward in the process. A second explanation along these lines is given by Rav Asher Weiss. Rav Asher Weiss, great Rosh Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, written many, many Sfarim. Rav Asher Weiss explains, you know what the mountain being dangled over our head was? It was a mountain that showed that you could take a big chance because you don't know if the mountain's going to be dropped on you. And if the mountain's dropped on you, Sham Tehek Veruskan, that's going to be very, very scary stuff. But despite the fact that B'nai Yisrael were given this challenge, that the mountain could be dropped on them, and presumably that's something that many people would be reluctant to do, right? I mean, you go into a situation which seems relatively safe, but you, then, you know, you're okay. Like, you go into an airplane, which is a major jet that people travel all the time. You feel relatively comfortable. You're going to go into, like, a one-engine, you know, plane, which only has, like, 4 or 5 seats. So most people would be reluctant to enter into, you know, kind of like such a tiny little vehicle because it's a much scarier experience. So this is, like, scary, you know? You're, like, I'm nervous even about going on Ferris wheels, you know? I mean, but, you know, here you're going to go into Kabbalah Satora with, like, a mountain dangling over your head. It's not, like, something that you necessarily would want to do. So Avashu Weiss says it was kind of like a test to see whether they would be prepared to go and walk right underneath the mountain. And he says they gravitated underneath the mountain with the same automatic comfort and the same ease and natural movement, just like children on Simchas Torah all gather underneath the Kol Ha'Na'arim Talis, even though, like, it's not clear you're going to make it, you know, with so many people crowded together. But you just naturally gravitate there under the Kol Ha'Na'arim Talis because that's the place to be. So he said the mountain dangling over them was like the Kol Ha'Na'arim Talis, that they just, it didn't matter that there was peril and that there was danger involved. It's just, since this is where the Torah was going to be, this is where they wanted to be. And that's the idea that they didn't philosophize about it, about how safe it would be or about how comfortable they would be. If this is what the Torah mandated, that's what they were going to do. And that's the idea of Kaf Olam Ahar Kegiges. It was a way for Bnei Yisrael to demonstrate their complete and utter commitment to keep the Torah regardless of circumstances, regardless of danger, regardless of challenges. It's just a representation of our love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and our complete trust of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's the second explanation. And the third explanation is given by a commentary to the Ein Yaakov in Masechta Shabbos. This commentary to the Ein Yaakov is called the Gaon Yaakov. And the Gaon Yaakov says that why is it that the other nations of the world didn't want to accept the Torah? She says the other nations of the world didn't want to accept the Torah because they felt that people have natural inclinations. They have a sense of fatalism, that a person's born a certain way, they're going to have a tendency towards this aveira or that aveira or the other aveira. They feel that nothing's going to enable them to overcome their uncontrollable urges for certain types of aveira, whether it's physical violence, whether it's stealing, like the Gemara in Shabbos talks about how the mother of Rav Nachman was told, by an astrologer, your son was born under a certain star, he's going to be a thief. And she had to work very hard to overcome that tendency. And she made sure that he would cover his head at all times, even as a little child, so the fear of heaven would be upon him and he wouldn't come to steal. And the Gemara tells a story. One time the wind or something blew the yarmulke or the head covering off his head, and immediately he ran to steal some fruit when he was a young child. But she had to overcome on his behalf that tendency. So the Gaon Yaakov explains that the other nations of the world were afraid that individuals wouldn't be able to overcome their evil inclinations because that's just who they were. So how can they submit to an absolute system of law that would require them to act a certain way? And the answer, of course, which the Gemara in Shabbos, towards the end of Shabbos, says, is Ein Mazel B'Yisrael, that the Torah enables us to overcome even natural inclinations so that we could channel natural inclinations. The person has a tendency towards violence, so instead of murdering people, the person ends up being a shochet or ends up being a moil. He ends up using that tendency for a positive purpose. So that's what the Torah does. The Torah enables us to take those impulses and channel them for a positive purpose. So the Gaon Yaakov says, so you know what the dangling of the mountain really was? The dangling of the mountain was a symbolism showing that the acceptance of the Torah and the forcible giving of the Torah to us was actually something that would be not to our detriment, but to our benefit. In other words, that by accepting the Torah, it was the Torah's way of saying that if you accept the Torah, so then this gufa, this acceptance of the Torah is precisely what is going to enable you to escape having the mountain fall upon you. Because the mountain is a representation of the natural forces of the world. If not for the Torah, then we would be subject to all of the natural forces of the world. And then the hurricanes and the mountains and everything and the natural inclinations and everything else would consume us. But because of the fact that we go l'mala min ha-teva, and that we are subject to a higher order by virtue of accepting the Torah, and therefore that is what enables us to be impervious to these natural forces, even our own natural inclinations, and it's what enables us to be able to overcome those natural inclinations. So to summarize this third category of answers, namely that the dangling of the mountain is an enhancement of our Kabbalah, is divided into these three different explanations. The explanation of Rav Asher Weiss, that it's like children entering under the talis on a Simchas Torah, that the entering under the mountain is like the is like this idea of that it's just a that it enhances our Kabbalah, like the children entering into the talis and Simchas Torah, that it shows that we're ready to submit ourselves to the Torah no matter what. The answer of the Gaon Yaakov, that this gufa of going underneath the Torah is what keeps us alive. This is actually what gives us chiyus, and is precisely what keeps us alive. And the explanation that I gave, the first explanation, the idea, somebody help me out here, the first explanation that the idea of the Kapha Aleim Hahar Kigigis, by virtue of it not being purely voluntary, therefore that gufa, that gives us a greater reward. The reason it took me longer to remember is because that was my own chiddush. That's the explanation that I came up with looking at the sources, that exactly is what gives us the greater reward. That's the idea of it being a har, that's the idea of it being a mountain. I'd like to, just like the Gemara in Sukkah talks about the mountain being the representation of the Yetzirah, of what's imposed upon us that creates the greater Yetzirah. So I'd like to conclude by noting one other interesting use of terminology in this medrash and what might be an additional layer of meaning. That the medrash talks about Kapha Aleim Ahar Kigigis, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu dangled the mountain over us like a gigis, like a tub. Of all the different things to analogize towards, why a gigis? Whether I could interpret it as a barrel, literally it means like a tub. Why a tub? What's the significance of gigis? So there is one Mishnah towards the end of Masechta Shabbos that also uses the terminology of gigis. And it uses the terminology of gigis in terms of what combines together two buildings. It talks about a case where there's one building where there's a mace, there's a dead body in that one building, and then there's another building that has an open window, and we're worried that the tumah, that the uncleanliness, the defilement of the mace is going to go from one building to another building, and it's going to cause the people in the second building to be defiled. And the Gemara says, why is it that it would be transferred, the tumah would be transferred from one building to the second building? So the Gemara says, because it was a case where there was a tent covering that was above both buildings, and the tent covering united both buildings together. And what was that tent covering called? What happened to be the type of tent that united the two buildings together that happened to be on top of one building and spread out to the top of the second building? It was a gigas. It was a tub. And it was that tub that actually connected the two things together. So it's very interesting that it's the same terminology here as a gigas. And I'd like to suggest that maybe there are two connotations that are being suggested to us by the usage of the word gigas in this particular fashion. One is that we know that learning Torah is something which you do in the context of a tent. Where do we see that in Parshas Chukas? Adam ki yamos be'oel. A person dies in a tent, right? Zos haTorah, this is the Torah, Adam ki yamos be'oel. And this is what conveys tumah, the idea of a tumah, of defilement, spreading from one building to another building if they're under the same tent. So that's described as tumas ohel, this the defilement of a tent. And the Gemara says, we learn from here, that ein divrei Torah miskayimin el b'misha memis atzmo aleihem, this is an allusion to the learning of Torah, that in order for Torah to really last, you have to kill yourself over Torah, meaning you have to exert yourself and work very, very hard over Torah. And maybe this is part of the idea of gigas that relates to the reluctance, for example, to accept the difficult parts of learning Torah, when you have to really strain yourself, when you have to struggle, when you have to make sacrifices to make sure that you, your husband, your family is able to, your children are able to learn Torah properly. So this is part of the idea of the gigas. It's like an ohel, where you have to struggle, and that you have to accept upon yourself the struggles of learning Torah, even when it's not easy, even when it's difficult, even when it entails a sacrifice of a material comfort, even when it entails a sacrifice of a tremendous time. All of that is included within the imagery, within the symbolism of gigas. But there's also another element to this imagery, and I'll conclude with this, and that's the idea of being connected, that the gigas connected the people from the one building with the people of the other building. That when you're all underneath one gigas, you're all underneath one har, you're all underneath one mountain, so what happens to one has ramifications and consequences with respect to what happens to the other. And maybe this is the idea of kafa aleihem har kigigas, that everyone was able to accept upon themselves as a community, Nasa v'nishma, we're going to keep the Torah. But the idea of being responsible for everybody else, for having an achrayus, having an obligation to see to it that other people are learning Torah properly, and understanding that when others are not learning Torah properly, then it's our responsibility as well to remedy that. So this is a much more difficult task. The collective responsibility that we all have towards each other, of all being underneath the same mountain, so that's kafa aleihem har kigigas, that if there's somebody who's not learning Torah in the next building, so that's something which impacts upon me as well. That's something which diminishes my own Torah learning and my own Torah fulfillment. So this is perhaps the other message that was being conveyed at Har Sinai, kafa aleihem har kigigas. Understand we're all in this together, that we're all together underneath the same mountain, and we have to protect not only ourselves, but we have to protect each other. And we have a responsibility to see to it to the greatest amount of our ability that we spread the word of Torah throughout the entire Jewish community, throughout Klal Yisrael, and we try to identify places, we try to identify communities, we try to identify people who would be able to benefit more from Torah and mitzvot, and figure out how are we going to spread that to them. And that's also part of our Kabbalah Samitzvot, And that's also part of the avoda that we should think about as we approach the holiday of Shavuos and as we try to implement both Matan Torah and Kabbalah Satorah for the entire year and for the rest of our lives. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Amazing.
Okay. Any questions?